LCTA 2428 was assigned as the leader of the 105th Flotilla of Assault Group J1 Support Squadron, assigned to Juno Beach in support of the 7th Infantry Brigade of the 3rd Canadian Division at Courcelles. On its deck it carried two Centaur tanks of the Royal Marine Armoured Support Group, and behind them, two armoured bulldozers of the Royal Canadian Engineers. The vehicles embarked onto the landing craft at Stokes Bay Gosport on June the 2nd, and then the flotilla anchored off of Leon Solent until June the 5th. At 7:05 that night, the landing craft weighed anchor and began their voyage out of the Solent. But LCTA 2428 wouldn't make it to Normandy. The extra armour and the tanks and bulldozers weighed the craft down and gave a little freeboard once the vessel was underway. Sometime later that night, LCTA 2428 broke down near the Nab Tower, about 5 miles east of Bembridge on the Isle of Wight. Unable to make way, the landing craft started taking on water from its starboard side. To reduce weight, the landing craft's commander considered having the two Centaur tanks driven off of the bow, but the Royal Marines Armoured Support Group commander refused to endanger his tank drivers' lives. Instead, His Majesty's tug Jaunty took off all the crew and army personnel and attempted to take the landing craft in tow. This failed, and the landing craft capsized. Its cargo slipped off the deck and down 20 meters to the seabed. Now upside down, the landing craft floated in the water for a while, but Jaunty, realizing the danger that this hazard posed to all of the other shipping leaving the Solent that night, fired on the upturned hull until eventually it too sank beneath the waves. The tanks and landing craft lay undisturbed on the seabed for a number of years, and it wasn't until the 1970s, when sports diving began to increase, that they were discovered again. But it would be some time before the connection between the two sites would be made. For a number of years, it was assumed that the tanks had fallen off of a piece of Mulberry Harbour as it was towed across the English Channel. It wouldn't be until South Sea Sub Aqua Club took an interest in the dive site that its true identity would be revealed. I spoke to Alison Mayer, a member of South Sea Sub Aqua Club, who has spent a number of years diving on both the tanks and the landing craft.
Well, I first dived the tanks and bulldozers back in 2004. It was an early season dive, very dark and poor visibility. And the group of us, well, I suppose there was about a dozen of us, that dived the site, fumbled around looking, trying to recognise the vehicles and establish where we were. After the dive, we sort of, some had seen one or two vehicles, others hadn't seen very much at all. And so we had a long break then until 2008, when I did a NAS Part 1 course, which was if you or your dive club find something interesting on the seabed and you want to survey and record it, this is how you would go about a basic project survey. Part 2 of the course is to go away and to do your survey as an example. And I thought back to the tanks and bulldozers and how we'd, you know, struggled to picture what we'd seen. And thought it might make a very good site to conduct my part two project and come up with a very basic survey. So I sort of talked to a few members in the dive club, and they too remembered the site, and the others seemed quite interested in it. And so I started building up a project plan, starting with an initial visit to the site in much better conditions, in sort of May, June time. The visibility was much better, it was lighter, and you could see from one vehicle to the next, so finding your way around the site was much easier. So using that experience of the initial dive, I sort of put together a project plan for 5 days of diving, using 25 different divers from the club, and drew up the basic site plan. We also went to the tank museum at Bovington to have a look at the tanks there and to seek advice from the historian David Fletcher, who was very helpful and gave us some sort of basic advice of well, if the drive cog is at the front, it's likely to be American. If it's at the rear, it's likely to be British. And these are the key features to look for to help you identify them. That was valuable information, and we quickly, as a result of that first dive, established that they were British tanks, but the surprising bit was that they were actually very rare British tanks, and that really did help with the subsequent research into how they'd got there, what type of tanks they were, who used them, what they were used for, and all the stories started to come together at that point.
So what inspired you to learn more about the cargo and the landing craft itself?
Well, it was a big mystery, really, and one that just drew you into it as you started to research and find out more and more information. The real big break for us was the fact that the tanks, these Centaur tanks, had only been used on one specific occasion by a specially created Royal Marines regiment. And by then looking into their war diaries associated with D-Day, I was actually managed to track down what had happened to these vehicles and the landing craft incident that had led to them being on the seabed. We then mounted a second project, which was to look for the landing craft from which the tanks and bulldozers had been lost. Now, the landing craft is actually 3 miles away and was, again, another well-known site discovered in the 70s and regularly visited by divers. But the connection between the two sites hadn't been made.
The unit that made most use of the LCTA was a special unit formed for D-Day, the Royal Marines Armoured Support Group, who would provide fire support in the first wave at Sword, Juno and Gold Beaches using Centaur tanks. It was initially intended that the Centaurs would have their engines removed as they would only need to bombard the beaches from the sea, but it was General Montgomery who reversed this decision after watching an exercise on the Dorset coast and pointed out that tanks would be more useful to him if they could move. As a result, the Royal Marine gun crews were supplemented with Royal Armoured Corps drivers and the Royal Marines Armoured Support Group was born. This unit was organised into 2 regiments and 1 independent battery. Each battery consisted of 4 troops, and each troop was made up of 5 tanks. Altogether, this totaled 100 tanks, but the unit was not meant to fight as a single body, but would be divided to provide support amongst the 3 British and Commonwealth beaches on D-Day. The unit was equipped with 80 Centaur CS-4 cruiser tanks and 20 Sherman tanks. The Centaur, a British design, had a convoluted lineage that dated back to the British Army's request of 1940 to provide a new tank to replace the unsatisfactory A-15 Crusader. 3 designs were proposed, of which the Nuffield Mechanisation and Aero Company's A-24 was considered the most promising. This design went on to be known as the Cavalier and used Nuffield's Liberty engine, but this was far from suitable for the task. Instead, the design was modified to accept the Rolls-Royce Meteor engine, which led to the creation of the Cromwell tank. Unfortunately, there were problems with the supply of the Meteor engine, and so the design of the tank was modified again to accept the Liberty engine once more. This remodified design was known as the Centaur. Early trials of the Centaur were unsatisfactory, and the first 300 tanks to be produced would only ever be used for training. In spite of this, a grand total of 1,821 Centaurs of various different marks were produced. These included modified designs that removed the gun turret to create a bulldozer or gun tractor, or replaced it with anti-aircraft guns. Otherwise, the Centaur was a typical cruiser tank, with a riveted hull and bolted plate turret. Its 5-wheel tracks were 14-inch wide, and it was protected with 76mm of steel armour. One model was the Centaur CS-4, or Centaur Close Support Mark IV. Only 114 of this particular mark were produced by John Fowler & Co. engineers. The tank was equipped with a 95mm howitzer, capable of flinging high-explosive anti-tank rounds at targets over 2.5 kilometres away, and the turrets of the tanks were painted with protractor markings so that an outside observer could direct their fire. The 80 Centaur CS-4s given to the Royal Marines Armoured Support Group were the only ones that would see combat. The rest were reserved for training purposes.